Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. It's the 23rd of April 2021. We're going to have a terrific show for you today. We're going to give you some real strategies for working in this crazy world of remote and hybrid and simultaneous learning. We've got a real expert, Juliana. I hope you know that now. You've been designated a true expert. Okay, Juliana Finnegan is the one of the managing partners over at the Learning Accelerator. Good friends of ours. Okay, and she leads their practitioner learning. And she's an expert, and I love this because she deals with adult learning. She is an expert in adult learning, okay, in designing tangible resources for all of you folks, practitioners, okay, in the field of education. It's going to be a good show about really building your toolbox. Again, it's learningaccelerator.org if you want to check out all the wonderful things they do. You want to check out all the wonderful things we do, go to ace-ed.org. That's A-C-E-E-D. .org, and that's our American Consortium for Equity in Education, ace-ed.org. Our wonderful magazine is over there, Equity and Access, Pre-K-12. It is an online journal. By the way, everything we do over there is free for you. We archive all the podcasts over there, including this one, and you'll see the icon for podcasts plus a ton of other information. Again, all free for you. Tell your friends, go over and check it all out at ace-ed.org. And now a true expert. There you go, Juliana. What's it like to be that? It's like you're talking to the Wizard of Oz. You know, you want to courage, you want heart. Now you. All I want to do is be an expert. Bing, you're an expert, just like that. Congratulations on that, your expertise.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm Larry. Good to have you here, Juliana. It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
And by the way, we had some technical difficulties yesterday, Thursday, and Juliana, you were so nice. I just want to thank you publicly. We moved the show to today now that everything's been corrected. So thanks a million for being such a good sport. Appreciate it.
No worries at all.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Tell us about the Learning Accelerator, learningaccelerator.org, good friends of ours, but not everybody knows what they do, and what you do over there. Did I explain it well, oh mighty expert?
Yes. So I'm actually a managing partner there focused on practitioner learning. So like you, I mean, you gave it a great intro and just really specializing in adult learning. I oversee how we like capture, design, and present resources and strategies for leaders and educators to ensure that they really are like concrete, accessible, and personalized to their needs. So kind of the Learning Accelerator is an educational nonprofit focused on ensuring effective, equitable, and engaging learning experiences for all students so they can reach their highest potential. We kind of do it through three gears. We say, one, we capture and codify best practices across the country, really like highlighting the excellence that people are doing so that we're not just working on little islands. Also, we network folks, educators, leaders, systems, so that they can actually lean on each other, learn from each other, and really identify and address like ecosystem challenges together. So many times in education, we like work in silos because we're just overwhelmed. So how can we build those opportunities to network?
Absolutely.
And then the last part is just like, how do we amplify? I love that you said your stuff is free too. Everything we do is free and open for anyone to use, because we honestly believe that's the only way we're going to impact change or scale best practices effectively, is that educators and leaders actually have access to vetted resources they can use like right away. So that's our big mantra. I always say F-word.
It is so important. Okay, the F word, free. I love it. It's great. We do the same thing, learningaccelerator.org. I mean, it is important. You just said something that's so cool. You said everybody, you talked about silos in education and how there's time pressures and all that on people. We never have time to do this and do that. And believe me, if we broke down those silos, we'd have more time. Because the using each other and working collaboratively, okay, in the end, it's going to save us tons and tons of time. And I have to say something else. You are an expert in adult learning. And sometimes, and I know I'm talking to educators here, but sometimes people think that kids and adults, K-12 kids, pre-K-12 kids, okay, learn the same way adults do. And they don't. There's even different words, pedagogy and andragogy, right?
No, totally.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
Yeah, go for it.
Go ahead. I'm going to say, then I'll let you say. Okay. What I'm going to say is that my wife, okay, had a recent training, okay, and through her company, and the training wasn't good. Her complaint was they talked like we were kids. Okay? They tried to teach us stuff like we were kids. These are all professional adults. All right? And the point is, there is a difference between how we approach teachers in their professional development, learning-wise. We can't teach them the way we would teach a child. It's a different learning thing. Was that brilliant or what, Juliana? How smart am I?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. We can now conclude the podcast. I think we've decided how smart I am. Yes. Now, talk to me about that. Talk to me and everybody else about that.
Yeah, so I think actually, so I was a high school chemistry and eighth grade science teacher at Title I schools in California for 10 years. And,
wow.
You know, and they, I'm a big chemistry dork. But so
I love that.
I think the thing is, too, is then I moved to really doing like, research. Actually, this like speaks to what we're talking about today is like, I guess it's 2 years ago this August, we had done a research study on like, what is effective learning, effective asynchronous learning for adults? And at the time it seemed extremely like, you know, random. It was like, oh, why are we doing this? This seems really exciting, but like, how does it apply? And then the pandemic happened and everyone's
right.
like, so that research you did on six key quality drivers around effective learning for adults, we were like, oh yeah, let's talk about it. And it was really, you know, focused on how do you build in rigorous and relevant content, active learning, mastery-based learning, like ensuring that the technology is ease of use and accessible enough that you're using the cognitive load for actually learning the content and not like figuring out the platform itself, and really building in opportunities of connection, both with their peers and with adults, and then also with personalization. So how are you personalizing the experience to both like build smaller milestones and all of that good stuff? A lot of that speaks to what is strong pedagogical pedagogy for students in K-12. But the big difference there when we're thinking about specifically remote learning is that students, K-12 students, need to actually have that foundations for self-directed learning. So like really, how do we build those whole child supports for our students and partnerships with their families and really those skills around independent learning, right? Because as adults, we've kind of built those into our normal approach to learning. But with students, like, how do we actually, like, give them the keys to their own learning? And then with adults, it's like, how do we use those keys to do really awesome, exciting, personalized work? So with adults, you can model best practices, but in an appropriate way that empowers the learners, empowers the adult learners, and not demeans them. Right. So it's like,
you're exactly
choices,
right.
Right.
You're exactly right, because it's hard to teach adults because they're adults. Okay. And it's like, I'll use the example. It's hard to give a guy directions when he's driving his car because he's a guy driving his car. It just is by definition. Okay. And nobody likes getting directions from someone else. All right. So my point is, you're exactly right. We have to understand the difference as you develop, okay, resources for educators who are, I might add, adults. Okay. And I think that's one of the challenges of professional learning, is that even though we are professional teachers, sometimes we don't come through with that for the very people we're trying to work with. It's really an interesting thing. And you know, you guys have put together a toolbox and strategy to support success, we wanted to name the show, in remote and hybrid and simultaneous learning worlds. The schools are heading back now, Juliana. By the way, you have a great name. You should get out of this business and just call Hollywood. Juliana Finnegan is a Hollywood star name. Okay, it's a great name. Okay, exactly the right amount of syllables, okay? Just so you know that. You should call immediately. Don't wait. But we'll just wait till after this podcast, then call them, okay?
Perfect.
Just tell them your
perfect.
Name is Juliana Finnegan. If they ask for more, just tell them you're an expert. You're an expert, okay?
I'm an expert.
There you go. Sounds good, doesn't it? Okay, why are we worried about remote learning now? What do you think is going to happen in the future?
Well, I think the big thing that we learned from systems who have been in a hybrid context since the fall is that, like, so as an educator, if I was told, like, okay, you can go back into your classroom, I mean, I'd be beyond excited to be able to, you know, put the agenda on the board, be able to work with the students in person, right? But what happened was when everyone started doing this hybrid model or simultaneous learning, they were doing everything in person and then figuring out how to engage the remote learners. The problem with that is like twofold. One, it's not accessible, it's not nimble, and it's not consistent for all learners. Like, what if a student has to go remote all of a sudden, or a remote person, student moves in person? They don't have that like consistent access point. And so what we actually learned was that within the remote, within hybrid and simultaneous learning, you really still need to build a lot of those access points in a remote-friendly way. So, like, still having expectations and agendas and the content and all of that in, like, online so that students can access it no matter where they are. And also that you're building a bridge between the in-person and the remote students so that it's not, like, us and them, but that you're still building like a communal aspect. So like, how are you offering opportunities for remote and in-person students to collaborate together, engage together, build community? So really trying to build those things, and also leveraging like a lot of our kids, some really strong skills around independent and self-directed learning over the last, you know, year, right?
Oh yeah.
How can we leverage those skills to better personalize their learning experience once they go in person? So really thinking through how, like, before, it's so funny, I'm always like, well, asynchronous, it's like we used to just call it homework, right? How are we using asynchronous and synchronous learning well? Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to just be like a worksheet, right? It's like, how do we do deeper learning? How do we do collaborative projects? These students have been collaborating on Google Docs for a year. So, like, you know, we don't want to just, like, switch back to the way it was. One, because it's not going to be accessible for all students, especially during this, like, these times where, you know, we start back school and then all of a sudden there is a COVID exposure and everyone's back. That's a lot of shifting for a teacher too, from just a like capacity standpoint. So how can you still build everything online so that it's nimble enough that anyone can pick it up and find it? Students can still do help seeking. They can still like find where they should be, without like having to be like, oh, that's on the board. I'm not in person. I can't see that. You know, how are we building those access points?
Yeah, and it's so interesting. I have to ask you something because you are an expert, okay? Before there was a time before the internet, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And we used to call learning and teaching that was not in person. We used to call it distance learning. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Or online learning.
Well, I'm even talking before online. Okay. Online. Okay. Literally a correspondence course. Think of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Literally. I mean, my point is, part of the when we're in front of a class, okay, the teachers are animated. All right, and they're moving around the classroom. They may be up in front. They may be on the side, wherever they might be running down the rows of students or in groups or whatever. All right? But it's a very different world when we're dealing with remote learning, okay? And my question is, have you heard about any teachers who are doing remote learning but not visually, which is an odd question? But I'm just curious about it, where they're simply working with the kid back and forth by mail or picking up projects or anything like that. We assume it's visual. But visual, and I love this, you can take this one to the bank. Somebody told me that when we do visual learning remotely, we tend to be static on the screen. We just sit there and talk into the screen. But that bores people. Imagine a movie where the actors just looked at you and never moved and just said their lines. Angles change. That's why there's editing. But we don't edit what we're doing. And I'm curious about your reaction on that when I say all these things.
So I think that actually brings up a struggle or a challenge that people had at the beginning was like, okay, so in some ways, you know, when you went on to Zoom or remote, it was like, we're presenting, right? It's a webinar. And I was like, there's a difference between engaging instructional experiences and a webinar.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that, like, and that's what people, like, what I've seen some great educators do is really doing these, like, multimodal type learning experiences where they're leveraging, and we talk about this little graph where it's kind of each quadrant is, like, asynchronous digital, synchronous, and using, like, the four modalities of asynchronous, synchronous, digital, and analog, but, like, really changing through those. And I actually got to observe a class where, like, I mean, she was just going, she was like, okay, so first I'm going to present something for about 10 minutes. Now you guys are going to go off in breakout groups. And one of the strategies is called Amtrak Learning Cards. I'm from Jersey, so I named it Amtrak. But basically Amtrak Learning Cards, students, they were like, okay, you're going to go work independently. Now pick which room you'd like. Do you want to work by yourself in the quiet car? Do you want to work in the conversation car? Or you can stay here and get some help.
Wow.
Right? Smart. That's building in options and choice. It's also engaging students in a different way. They're like, this is what we do in person, right? So they move off to the groups, they work independently, then they come back and they share their stuff as a group in a chat. And, like, we actually had a cool thing called wait questions where everybody puts their question in. The teacher says 3, 2, 1 from Intrinsic in Chicago, and it says go. They all put in their answers, and then the students read through everybody's answers as, like, a gallery walk to be like, oh, I'm seeing that we're all consistent on this, or I'm seeing, like, actually, like, it seems like we need to clarify this. It's a virtual gallery walk. So, like, these educators are not just saying, okay, so I'm going to talk to you guys for the next, like, hour. They're like,
they can't.
These are small bits
kids.
Of multimodal ways, right? Like, they're doing, like, 10 minutes presentation, 20 minutes small group, 20 minutes sharing, 10 minutes, like, analysis, you know, really leveraging all that remote and hybrid learning has to offer as opposed to seeing the barriers, you know, and basically using that, like, video time as a time to connect and, like, do the quick check-ins and do those quick checks for understanding. So I think it's really cool to, like, and I do think that, like, you know, a webinar, when I present on webinars, I'm always like, I'm going to warn you right now, you're going to have to work. So I'm going to be asking you to put stuff in the chat. You're going to be put in small groups. Like, this is going to be interactive and engaging because that's how to learn new content and be able to actually digest
and I'll tell you something. If you don't do that, you have to teach by example. Okay?
Totally.
And too often, all right, when teachers are in, you know, we have all these ed tech and guide on the side and all that sort of stuff. But too often, teachers in teachers' college are subject to lectures. And that can't be. The education professors must teach by example. Excuse me. If they're going to teach kids, future teachers how to teach. Pardon me, I just lost it there for a second. I apologize. Okay?
It's really
an important factor here. And everybody got, all of a sudden, people who were not trained in online, teaching online, teaching remotely, however it was going to happen, all of a sudden they all had to do it. Everybody had to do it. Okay? Juliana, as you went and talked to educators, what are the top things that came to mind, and what are the top things that they needed and will need in the future regarding this? They got to be prepared for this in the future, and we all know that. What do they need? What's the toolbox? Yeah.
So I think the big thing, so just to, like, reverse back a little bit, I was able to talk to about 50 educators across the country, and, like, my question was pretty simple. I was like, so what has made you or your students feel or be successful within this crazy time, right? Like, what makes you smile, or what makes them smile, or, like, what makes them engaged? Like, what is the thing? And it was funny because they'd be like, oh, I don't know. And I'm like, well, you were recommended, so, like, something's going well. Like, talk me through your day. And it can sometimes be just, like, the simplest thing. Like, I had one teacher who said, you know, every day she has her students, like, come off of mute to, like, she has, like, a different topic each time, like, your favorite candy, and they just come off mute and say their candy, and that's the way she does attendance. And she's able to get a quick read on, is it really loud in their house, should I not push them to come off mute later, like, is something going on, you can kind of hear it in their voice. Also,
that's
with students in person, like, seeing their body language, right? It was a really quick social and emotional read for that teacher to be able to see, like, where are we at? And it was, like, low stakes for the kids, right? They just had to say one candy. And I was like, that right there is a strategy that I like to capture and share with people, because it's something that we forget. We sometimes jump into the learning without, again, going back to that foundations for self-directed learning of, are the students feeling safe and supported? Are they, like, getting all of their needs met? Like, you know, because a lot of times people are like, we're worried about engagement, and they purely think engagement, back to your video conference, like, comment, is, like, that they're on video. But I will tell you, I've been on video a number of times, and I'm not engaged, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Like, engagement is engaging with the content. So they could be on chat. They may not need the video. Like, that, being able to turn off their video could make them feel safer based on, like, what's going on at home or, like, how they're feeling that day. Or, like, you don't want your – I don't want my picture, like, you know, blasted in the – if they're doing a hybrid model and having all of the kids, you know, screens up on the wall. Like, that's scary for anybody.
It is scary.
So really trying to figure out options that enable students. So I think when we talk about strategies was like, how can we capture and codify some of these moments of excellence and these small granular strategies that any educator can pick up and use tomorrow to help their instruction? Like, how can we, like, we're in this technology age, but in education, we still reinvent the wheel, like, every year, or we go to Google. Right. And we're like in the middle of the night. I'm like, okay, how am I teaching stoichiometry tomorrow? Let's try this. And so, like, how can we capture and codify those best practices, scale them so that others can, one, feel supported and really able to do that work, and also able to implement well, no matter the context they're in.
And that's, you know, that's really good. And one of the things that I think teachers really missed this year was not only, quote, I'm not going to call it their interaction with kids, but just being in the room with kids and feeling the vibe, okay? You can see if a kid is in distress. You get a sense. You get a sense that the kids are off today. Something, something, okay? And you don't have that, okay, with the remote. You lose that, if I may, that emotional side of it all right? And what you just said is a great strategy. Okay, just to kind of give 2 seconds, okay, of reality there, and doing a reality check, making a tiny emotional connection that makes sense. And by the way, what is your favorite candy, Juliana? What would you say, boom, now?
A Charleston Chews.
Really?
I'm like, random. I really like Charleston Chews.
Wow. Mine would be Twizzlers. I do Twizzlers.
Oh, I do like Twizzlers, too. I do like Twizzlers, too, but Charleston Chews in the freezer are delicious.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? Did they pull out all your fillings? How many fillings do you have? None.
None.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah, hear that, everybody? Whatever you do, listen to Juliana about everything else, but not that. Okay?
Not Charleston Chews.
Wow, Charleston Chews. That was the last thing I was expecting. Now you put me in the mood to go buy Charleston Chews. I haven't had those in about 4 million years. Okay? You know, it's an interesting thing. Okay? We lose with remote learning. Okay? We lose a bit of the connection. Everybody will admit that. But what are you hearing about the expectations of teachers from their students? Are they all going with lower expectations? Should you change your expectations? Well, what's your thoughts on that, or what have you heard?
So, I mean, we don't ever want to change our expectations for our students, right? And that was interesting because I heard you say, like, the expectations for the teachers.
Yeah.
And so one thing I think that it was really interesting in some of my conversations, and this speaks to expectations, but also kind of what you said about the connection piece, is so many people are like, oh, you can't have the same connection. But I had multiple teachers I interviewed who said they've never known their kids better because they basically were now in their house. They were in their house with their family. And she's like, I got to see, I knew everything about their family. She was like, but I had to take that time to do one-on-one checks with the students. She's like, but I was able to. Like, she did, this is with younger students, with third and fourth graders. And, like, when they were working independently, she would break off with each kid for a quick, like, 2 minute, like, how are you doing? And she's like, I couldn't do that privately in person. Right?
Yeah.
And she was able to do it remotely because she was able to, like, go off to a small group or chat with them, you know, directly. And she's like, I'm able to, like, know them. And she said, you know, and also, I mean, the fact is when they're the remote students, they don't have a mask on.
Yeah.
And so that's been an interesting shift too, is we were all like, okay, when we go in person, now the students can collaborate easier. It's going to be so much better. And all of a sudden they were like, actually the meaningful collaboration within these hybrid and simultaneous learning is sometimes between the remote and in-person kids in a remote space, because they're able to more quietly talk to each other. Because like a kid doesn't want to yell friend like a secret or like, I have a question, I missed that, right? So like one strategy someone did was remote buddies. So every remote student had an in-person buddy. So they could like be like, hey, I didn't hear that, or I had a question, or even just that like community feel, right? So I think like figuring out ways to leverage those tools to actually engage students to get closer. Like one teacher actually does Fitness Fridays. Every Friday she has 30 minutes where they did fitness, and parents and siblings could come to it, and she would actually Zoom in different friends to do like a CrossFit workout, a yoga workout, a whatever workout. They would all get to wear workout clothes. She said sometimes the parents would take off of work for a little bit and like get in workout clothes and do it together. And be silly, right?
Yeah.
And she was like, this was a way for me to essentially, like, bring everyone together as a community, whether they're in person or home. And we all just did, like, 30 minutes of activity, got our body moving. She's in Santa Barbara. And just, like, kind of let loose. She's like, I feel like we're so tense all the time, too. Like, how do we let ourselves just, like, have fun? And so I think that, like, we can use remote and hybrid learning as an excuse and being like, oh, I can't see them because they're not in person. But, I mean, don't get me wrong. Educators are tired. They have so much on their plate.
Oh, yeah.
I think, like, this is me saying, like, have some fun, too. Like, let yourself breathe as well. You know, that teacher actually was like, Fitness Fridays is what I look for it to.
Yes, exactly.
Personally, she was like, I want to jump around and be goofy for 30 minutes and like be like, my kids are smiling and they're not like, why aren't you doing this? Or why, you know, like, it's a time for like everyone to have the expectation that like, we're just doing this together for fun to support each other because we need it.
Yeah.
We need this.
And it has been, and I'll tell you a cute story on that, has been an exhausting year. And I had one superintendent that I was interviewing. Okay, you know, everybody was remote. This was in Illinois, and it snowed one day, and he gave everybody the day off, even though there was no reason to give them the day off because everybody was simply connected on the Internet. But he said, we have to go back to some sense of normality. Let's do a surprise snow day. Okay, it's snowing out. We would close the schools if there was a physical school. I'm going to give them the day off. And he did. And just that kind of stuff that matters to create a normal feel for it. What do you see happening next year? And again, California has been under some real strain lately. You're out there. What are you seeing just nationally as you talk to people? Go ahead, Juliana.
So actually now I'm in Seattle. So it's okay. No, I moved up here. And the interesting thing is I've actually worked remotely for 8 years already. So I've always been working remotely. So I was like, oh, welcome to my office, everyone.
That's right.
Like, I have two toddlers. I have two toddlers at home now that used to not be at home with me. Wow. So it's, you know, an interesting transition.
You have two toddlers?
Yeah,
that's a lot. That's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. it's interesting, you know.
Yes.
But I think, you know, the reality, so the reason I say Seattle is, you know, we just started back with some in-person learning, like just in the last few weeks. And so I think there's going to be a lot of learnings in many places because a lot of schools and a lot of districts have just started back.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say I am not an expert on these system level things. But from all of my colleagues' work, you know, I think the thing is like, we're going to have hybrid for a while because I think we're going to have to offer some sort of remote option.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody.
For a bit, you know.
Everybody.
And
yep.
So I think the thing is we have to still think about, like, how do we build remote-friendly assessments that are accessible and equitable for all of our students? You know, because we also have, like, at-risk students. We have at-risk teachers.
Right.
You know, how are we thinking through all of these pieces so that we're not just marginalizing groups? And then also, how are we thinking through, you know, if we're going back in person, how are we still engaging remote and hybrid students together so that they're all still like reaching their highest potential? And so I think that's what speaks to the whole idea of how are we designing these multimodal learning experiences that leverage asynchronous, synchronous, digital and analog, as well as our new foundation for self-directed learning and their skills around learning. And I think one thing that we keep talking about too is like this whole, I think I called it recalibration of reentry.
Yeah.
Basically the idea is like, you know, it's like the college syndrome. When you come home from college and your parents are like, so you need to be home by 10. And you're like, yeah, good talk. Like, I have not been coming home at 10 when I was in college. You know, we've had students who've been driving their learning successfully. Like, I spoke to someone who...
Very successfully.
She said, I'm nervous about my son going back to school, but meanwhile, I'm pushing for my district to go back in person because many students need to be back in person. But my student is actually, like, never loved learning more than working remotely.
Isn't that
interesting? So, like, how do we, like, make sure that the picture the educator has in their mind of what in-person looks like and the picture the student has in their mind is calibrating with each other so that we don't have, like, these moments of, you know, just, like, butting heads, right? Like, if a student's like, I've been doodling every day while I've been to school remotely for a year, and then I come in, they're like, you can't doodle. You're like, but I've been doodling for a year. Like, how do we have conversations and partnerships with families so that we understand what the students have been doing at home to be successful? And so I think, like, you know, how do we actually, like, leverage those learnings both from students and families and teachers so that we can kind of, like, say, okay, you can't doodle all the time, but, like, we'll have some time where you get to work or you can sit on the floor if you need. You know, like, how are we building an option? So it's going to be – I think it's going to be interesting. There's going to be a lot of pain points.
What you just described is going to be very interesting because, you know, there's an old song from the 1920s or something. And it's how you're going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Paris, okay, which was a song about our American doughboys in World War One from Kansas or wherever, Alabama or Wyoming, okay, who'd never been anywhere else. And suddenly we shipped them off to Paris, and they saw the European continent. All right. So how are you going to keep them down on the farm after they've seen Paris? And it's the same thing here. We suddenly discovered, okay, that people can learn and do learn, and some of them really like learning in their own ways. Okay. And geez, are we in charge of them? Where we talk about student voice. Okay. But there's a new normal out there, and we've got to take all that into consideration. And you know, what you said, you started to talk about assessments. And assessments were always to see where we were, but they were approached differently, or I think we need to approach them differently. Okay? We have to use this year's assessments to see where these kids literally are. Okay? On a more even individual basis than we've ever done it. Okay, it used to be standardized so we could see where the whole class is. Okay, but now we got to look at it now individually and assess what worked for this kid when under a different system. Do we need to change the system? Of course, and Juliana, agree or disagree with me, we're not going to go back to what it was. It's just going to lead to some real challenges. You know,
it's
really an amazing time. It's an amazing time to be in education.
Yeah, it's been really interesting because I kind of joke that a lot of my friends didn't really, like, know what I did before the pandemic. And then, like, you know, I worked in, like, you know, personalized blended learning, innovation. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, it came out and they're like, so what do you do again? I feel like we need to talk. Like, all of a sudden, you know, because Learning Accelerator has also done work with Parabola Project around how do you safely reenter. And we have toolkits on, like, that. And so everyone, like, my daughter's pre-K is like, can you send me those docs, you know?
The world has changed. The world has changed.
The world has changed. And I think parents are really seeing their students as learners now in many ways. Like, I think even I was in education always, and, like, I guess I saw it with my students, but really, like, experiencing what works and what doesn't work for them, and seeing that firsthand has been really interesting too. Just from a parent perspective, I'm like, oh,
yep.
Okay, you know, because
yep.
That usually happens
well,
away from home.
it's really
so,
an amazing world.
Yeah.
It really is. We got to leave. I'm running out of time here. You were just wonderful. Thank you, Juliana. This was great. I loved it.
Thank you so much for having us in.
You can wear a T-shirt now that says expert. Or your
yes.
husband can wear one that says I'm with an expert. It can point to you.
That's even better.
You can wear the
also,
I'm with stupid one. That's okay. But he needs to wear the I'm with an expert one.
Oh, goodness.
Yes.
I was going to tell you also, we have a ton more strategies in our problem of practice around hybrid learning, simultaneous learning, and we've really captured all of these from schools across the country. So they're like amazing educators who are doing great things that you can really just pick up and use for free.
Right.
Again. So.
It's learningaccelerator.org.
You guys are
terrific. You really, really are. We work with you closely with our consortium, and the reason is because you're so darn good at what you do. You're another prime example of that. Thanks, Juliana. Have a great weekend.
Thank you so much.
In Seattle.
You as well.
Is Pike Street open yet, by the way? Pike Street Market?
I think part of it is, but it's been super sunny here, so everyone is just outside. It's been lovely.
Yeah.
It's like 70 degrees
yeah.
and sunny, so no one's in their house. It's been awesome.
That's super. Here in Maine today, I'll just give you an idea. It's warming up, but it was 20 degrees when we started, and the wind has just been blowing like crazy. We can't wait for spring. We can't wait for real spring. Okay? So
spring in Maine is pretty amazing, though.
Yep, it is. Okay? From across the country, you take care. Okay? Take care of those kids.
Thanks. You too. Will do. Thanks
Bye-bye.
So much. Have a great day. Bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye. Juliana Finnegan from the Learning Accelerator. Want to get good stuff? Learningaccelerator.org. We're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org. Check it all out. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening. Have a safe and enjoyable weekend.